We're on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, and we got up to Iboilu. So let's count up from the bottom of the Amud about 10 lines. And the Gemara says, Avar Vishah Mai. If a person violated the Isur Shehiyah, let's assume we go like the Chachamim, who say that you're not allowed to leave a pot of food on an open fire going into Shabbos. Mikansu Rabbanon Olo. Did the Rabbanon go a step further and impose a penalty on him, and therefore they established that he's not allowed to eat the food that cooked on Shabbos? And the Gemara says the following. Toshma, the Omar Shmuel Bar Nosson, Omar Rav Chanina, Kishaholach Rabbi Yossi Litzipori, Rabbi Yossi was traveling up north, Motzah Chamin Shinishtaw Al Gabi Kira, and he found that people had left hot water on a Kira that was an Eno Goruf and Eno Kotum, Vilo Asar Lahem. In the case of a liquid substance, he did not prohibit them from drinking the water. However, he also discovered that Beitzim Mixumakos Shenishtawa Gabi Akira, they had left eggs on top of the Kira. The Kira was an Eno Garif Eno Katuf, and it was Beitzim Mitsumakos. Mitsumakos means that they began to shrivel up, which means they would have a situation called Mitztamek V'yofalo.
Rabbi, is this on Shabbos or after Shabbos?
This is on Shabbos.
On Shabbos.
V'asar lehem, and he said to them, you're not allowed to eat it on Shabbos. Why? Because you violated the Isur Shehiyah, and you left the Kira without Garuf HaKotum, and the eggs were cooking and cooking and cooking. The implication of the Gemara is that although the eggs may have cooked already before Shabbos, but nevertheless they got better and better with the continuous process of Bishul on Shabbos, and that was beneficial. That's called Mitztamek V'yofalo. And if you remember from yesterday's Shia, we had a long discussion about Mitztamek V'yofalo, and we had one major opinion amongst the Amoroim that Mitztamek V'yofalo is considered Bishul, and therefore it makes sense that Rabbi Yossi would prohibit them from eating these eggs. The continuous process of Bishul was beneficial, even though the eggs were cooked before Shabbos. However, as far as water is concerned, and this we emphasized yesterday, that once the water is boiled, the continuous process of boiling is detrimental because the water starts evaporating. And therefore, he did not prohibit them from drinking the hot water, but only the Beitzim Mitsumakos. And the Gemara says the following, my love, should we not assume Leoso Shabbos, which means that he didn't want them to benefit from the Shehiyah, the violation of Shehiyah, on that particular Shabbos. Now, let me try to formulate what the Gemara is vacillating back and forth about. There are two ways of defining Maisa Shabbos. You remember that yesterday we introduced the concept of Maisa Shabbos. One way of defining Maisa Shabbos is, don't benefit on Shabbos itself from that which you were not permitted to do. You did some sort of cooking. Again, I emphasize that here the cooking took place on Erev Shabbos, but nevertheless, he set it up in such a way, violating the Issur Rabbanan of Shehiyah, that the cooking would continue on Shabbos. If we were to allow him to eat these eggs on Shabbos, he would be, retroactively, he would be benefiting from the fact that he left these eggs on the open fire. That's one way of determining it. And I'll explain the nafkamina in just a second. The other way of defining it is to say that the Rabbanan made an absolute knas, meaning they created what we call a cheftza di sura, and they said that since this food was cooked on Shabbos, it's asur. It's like, what should I say, nevelu trefa. The Gemara thinks, at this point, my lovely also Shabbos, that Rabbi Yossi went as far as to say, don't eat these eggs on Shabbos. You want to eat them after Shabbos, you want to eat them next Shabbos, put them in the fridge, that's fine. Which means that there's no separate knas that goes above and beyond the benefit that he gets from the cooking, and converts this object, this foodstuff, into a cheftza di sura. That kind of a knas he did not impose. To benefit from Shabbos, from a violation of Shabbos, that he would not allow. But if he wants to put these eggs away for next Shabbos, that's okay. There was no knas that was imposed to penalize him and say that this food is forevermore prohibited, like a piece of nevela. So the answer is lo, l'Shabbos haba. It's quite possible that in that case in Tzipori, what Rabbi Yossi Paskin was, that there's a knas, and we're going to go as far as to penalize him and say that the eggs are prohibited, and he violated the Isur of Shehiyah on an Eina Garf Eina Katum in a case of Mitztamik V'Yofalo, and now he can no longer benefit from these eggs. Basically, he's got to throw them out. So the Gemara doesn't come to any conclusion, any definite conclusion, based on the story of Rabbi Yossi in Tzipori. We're not sure whether he went as far as to say that these eggs would be usher even for the next Shabbos, and there was a knas that was imposed, the penalty. The Gemara now analyzes this episode with the following comment, Michlal, debatesim mitzumakos mitzamkos v'yofala ninhu. Now what we're about to embark upon is sort of a culinary Talmudic statement, and the Gemara wants to know, what's the story with an egg? You and I know that we don't want to overcook eggs. You know, when they start shriveling up, they become very small. That's not a good idea. And yet, apparently from the story, the episode of Rabbi Yossi, we have to conclude that Beitzim Mitzumakos is called Mitztamik V'yofel. And the Gemara says, in, that's really true. The Omer Rav Chama Bar Chanina, Pamachas Nisarachti Aniva Rabbi Bilmokum Echot. Once Rebbe and I were in the same place, we were both guests in the same hotel. They view the Fanenu Beitzim Mitzumakos. They brought in front of us shriveled up eggs that were so shriveled that they were Ki'uzradin. Uzradim are very small apples. And he uses that as a mashal to explain how shriveled up these eggs were. And it was a delicacy for us. So again, you're going to have to fight this out with the gourmet cooks, but the Gemara assumes that eggs, even if you cook them and cook them, and they shrivel up, again, they're not going to fill up your belly because they're very small, but they're tasty. And therefore, the continuous bishul is beneficial. That's called mitztamik v'yofel. Now we get back to our Mishnah. Beis Hillel omrim af machzirin, which means that Beis Hillel took the heter, the leniency of a garif katum, to its final conclusion. Meaning that once you make this kira into a garif katum, then not only are you allowed to leave the pot of food inside the kira or on top of the kira, you're even allowed to take the food on Shabbos off the oven and put it back on and return it. That's called af machzirin. Amar af sheshes, and now we're going to turn to daf lamed ches amid beis. L'divrei ha'omer machzirin afilu b'Shabbos. If Beis Hillel allow chazara, then that applies even on Shabbos. In other words, not only are you allowed to replace the pot into the Kira, if let's say it was taken off on Friday night, but you're even allowed to replace it on Shabbos. What's the big chiddush here? You would have thought that if on Friday night you take it off the Kira, then by replacing it, you're just reinstituting the original Shehiyah. So we allowed you to do Shehiyah, and on Friday night, we're going to allow you to do Chazorah. But Rav Sheshes wants to tell us that Beis Hillel went a step further. Even by day, you're allowed to put it back on this Eino Garef Eino Katum. And the Chiddush is that even though this replacement, when you put the pot back onto this Kira that's a Garef Eino Katum, is so separated in time with a great interval from Erev Shabbos, from Friday afternoon, it's now a full 12 hours later. Nevertheless, if you want to keep your food hot for Shalosh Shudis, you're allowed to do so. And it's considered, again, we're going to have all sorts of conditions that have to be met, as if you're replacing the original Shehiyah, even though so long of a period of time has passed. So in other words, you would have had a Havamina that even when you're allowed to leave a pot on the Kira, and you're allowed to replace it back on the Kira, that's only on a Friday night. But you might think that on Shabbos, we're going to allow you to take it off the Kira, but we're not going to allow you to replace it in the Kira. And that's where Rav Sheshes wants to tell us that Beis Hillel's statement and his leniency was unqualified, and therefore it applies even on Shabbos itself. V'yafrav Oshia sover af machzirna fil b'Shabbos. And now the Gemara quotes Rav Oshia. Rav Oshia is a very early Amora, first generation. It's almost like quoting a Tana. The Amor of Oshia, Rav Oshia is going to prove to us that according to Beis Hillel, you're allowed to return the food onto the Kira that's Gufa and Ketuma, even on Shabbos itself. Pamachas. Hayinu Omdim Li'ela Mirav Chia Rabba. We were standing in the presence of Rav Chia the Great. Ve'alenu lo kumkum shalchamin. And he was apparently on the second floor. We were on the lower floor. And we brought up to him a kettle of hot water, midyuta tachtona, from the lower floor to lidyuta elyona, to the upper floor. Umazagnu lo kos esakos. And we poured him a cup of wine. In the old days, they used to have concentrated wine. And they would do what's called meziga. They would dilute the concentrated wine by adding hot water. And then, here's the chiddush, hichzarnu limkomo. We replaced the kettle onto the kira on the lower floor. V'lo amar lanu davar. And he didn't object. So Rav Oshia seems to indicate that you're allowed to return food to a kira even on Shabbos day. And the Gemara understood that this entire episode took place on Shabbos day. The Mefarshim want to know, how do we know for sure that this took place on the day of Shabbos? And they have many different diyukim. But in any event, the bottom line is, for our purposes, that Rav Oshia supports the view of Rav Sheshes, that when Beis Hillel allowed you Chazara on Akira that's Gara for Khatum, they did so even Shabbos by day. Omer Rabbi Zrika, Omer Rabbi Ab, Omer Rabbi Tadai, Lo Shanu El Sha'odam Biyado. If the whole purpose of being lenient and allowing you to replace the Tavshil on Shabbos is because you are reinstating the original Shehiyah, that has to fulfill the following condition. It's Odam Biyado. He's holding on to the pot. He hasn't yet put it down. Once he puts it down on the ground, then it's considered a brand new chazara, and it's not the chazara that replaces the original shehiyah, and that's forbidden on Shabbos. That looks like bishul. When you put a tavshil onto a hot kira on Shabbos, that looks in the eyes of the spectator as if he's doing Bishul. Now, notice that there are two phrases over here in Rav Zrika. First, he talks about Odom Biyado, and then he talks about Hinichan al Gabi Karka. If it's Odom Biyado, it's Mutter. If it's Hinich al Gabi Karka, it's Osir. Now, what about the gray area in between? What happens if he doesn't put it on the ground, but he's not holding it in his hands? For example, he puts it on a table surface, or on what we call the Shayish. The Gemara is going to go into great detail to try to analyze the language of Rav Zrika to see how far he went in insisting on this condition. Did it really mean that he's holding up the pot in midair? Or, that far we don't have to go, the condition could be fulfilled even if he's not holding the pot, he has to stand there like a tukey, you know, like a robot and hold the pot, he could put it down, but he shouldn't put it down on the karka. Once he puts it down on the karka, then he's not allowed to return it to the kira. Amar Rabbi Ami, Rav Tadai, the Ovid Ligarmehu, the Ovid, Rav Tadai was doing what he thought was right, and he instituted his conditions. But you know what? We don't follow, says Rav Ami, his psak, his ruling. Why? Elohochi Omer Rav Chia Omer Rav Yochanan. We have another statement of Rabbi Chia in the name of Rav Yochanan. Afilu nichal gabi karka muta. That even if he put the pot on the ground, he's allowed to bring it back into the Kira. And the Gemara is now going to try to analyze this machlokes about this condition, whether it has to be Odom Biyado, or could even be Nichal Gabi Karka, based on another machlokes. Pligi Bar Rav Dimi Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. In fact, we find an explicit machlokes on this very issue between two Amoraim, Rav Dimi and Rav Shmuel. Shavaya Mishmeid Rabbi Lezer Amri. And they both had each one had its own version of what Rabbi Lezer had said. Chad Omar, according to one version, Odom Biyado Mutter Al Gabi Karka Asur, V'chad Omar Inichon Al Gabi Karka Nami Mutter. So this machlokes between Rav Tadai and Rabbi Yochanan is in fact a machlokes, an identical machlokes, between Rav Dimi and Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. And now the Gemara wants to know, under what situations and what conditions have to be met to replace food on Shabbos onto the Kira, that's a Garf and a Kotum. Omar Chizkia Mishmeid Abaye, Hadi Amrit Odom Biyado Mutar. Even if you're telling me that we require that he hold on to the pot, that's not an automatic permission to permit putting it back onto the Kira. We need another condition that has to be fulfilled. Lo amaran el shedaiton lahachzir, aval ein daiton lahachzir asur. Not only does Chizkia accept the shita of Rav Tadai, that we can only allow you to replace the pot on the Kira on Shabbos in the case of a garfa katum. If you're still holding on to the pot, then you can put it back onto the Kira, but in addition, we're going to require that you have what's called Daiton Lahachzir. Daiton Lahachzir means that his intention, his mental state, was to replace it back onto the Kira. But if he decided at the moment that he took it off the Kira that he has no intention of, he's going to eat up, you know, whatever is inside the Kedera, and he has no intention to replace it onto the Kira, then you cannot tell me that even though he hasn't put it down and he's still holding it, that he's replacing the original Shehiyah of Erev Shabbos. Because his decision not to put it back onto the oven is a definite, irreversible, irretractable decision that separates, it's a hefsek, between the netila, which means the removal, and the replacement in order to get back to the original situation of Shehiyah. Now, the Gemara is medayik. Michlal dal gabi karka. If he's not holding it in his hands, but rather he put it back on the ground, this afal pisha daitel achzer asur, according to the first understanding of Chizkiah, which we just read now, we have two independent conditions, both of which have to be checked off. Number one, he's holding on to the pot. He hasn't put it down on the ground. Again, we're going to talk later about the middle case. And number two, it was daitel achzer. He took it off with the intention of putting it back on. If any of those two conditions are missing, for example, he put it on the karka, even though he had intention to put it back on, or alternatively, he was holding it in his hand, but he took it off with the intention of leaving it off the kira, in both of those scenarios, he's not allowed to replace it, because we have two absolute independent conditions that have to be fulfilled in order to allow you to put the kira, to put the tavshil back onto the kira. That's one version. Ika di Amri, we have another version. And according to this version, Chizkiah said something else. Amar Chizkiah mishmei di Abaye hodi Amri al gabi karka osur. That which we said, that if you put it down on the ground, you're not allowed to put it back onto the kira. Let's qualify that isur. Lo amronen elisha ein daito lachzar. Lachzir, I will daito lachzir mutar. Which means that according to this Ikur D'Amri, Chizkiah said that the only time it's asur is if you have both conditions. If one of those two conditions are lacking, then you're allowed to replace it onto the kira. So, for example, if you're holding it in your hands, even if you were ain't daito lachzar, you're allowed to replace it because you're still holding it in your hands. If you're not holding it in your hands, you put it on the ground, but it was daito lachzar, you're allowed to replace it. Michlal, so the Gemara understands that sheba odon biyado, if the pot is still in his hands, aval pishein daito lachzar mutar. So we have a double nafgamina here between the two lishonos of Chizkiah in the name of Abaye. According to both these lishonos, we have conditions that have to be met in order to allow chazara on Shabbos on agara fekatum. But the question is, do we have to have two conditions or one condition is enough? According to the first lishna, two conditions have to be met. It's got to be odin biyado, and it has to be daito lahachzir. According to the second, any one of those two conditions, if they're fulfilled, is sufficient to allow you to replace it onto the oven. And the double nafkamina would be, A, what would be the din if it was adayin odin biyado, but ain't daito lahachzir, or B, if it's inichal gabi karka, but it was daito lahachzir. The first Lishna would be Machmir, and the second Lishna would be Mekel. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah vacillated about the following question. Tlon v'makel mahu. What happens if he took it out of his hands, but he didn't put it on the ground? He left it hanging, so to speak, suspended in midair. He was holding it onto some sort of a stick, a pole. Do we say, or alternatively, another scenario, he nichon al gabi mitomau. If instead of putting it on the ground, he put it on a surface, on a bed, or on a table. So how do we interpret these two conditions? Are we going to say that the first condition, which has to be met, is odom biyado, and here it's no longer odom biyado, it's talon b'makel, or he nichon al gabi mito? Or do we say no? The condition is that he shouldn't put it down on the karka, but here he didn't put it on the karka. And the Gemara comes to absolutely no conclusion. The poskim in Or HaChaim Simon Reish Nun Gimel have a debate about what happens in the case where he puts it down on a surface level, or you're allowed to replace it. And there are many shitos that require that you at least hold on to the pot. In other words, it's not really that you're carrying the pot, but at least you're still holding on to the pot. So if you're holding on to the handle of the pot and it's on a surface level, they will allow you to put it back onto the kira. Boy, Rav Ashi, pinon mi mecham le mecham mahu. What happens if he has a kettle of hot water? He takes the kettle off the fire, and he transfers the contents, the water that's in the kettle, into another kettle. And the Gemara says, teku. The Gemara says, we don't have an answer to either of these two questions. Now, the second question is very fascinating, because certainly, it's very difficult to imagine that the second kettle, the second mecham, when he puts it back, is considered replacing the original shehiyah of Erev Shabbos. It's a whole different utensil. But apparently, what Rav Ashi was raising the possibility is that the entire Iser of Chazara only applies to the original pot or utensil in which the bishul took place. Once you transfer to a second pot, you're obviously involved in the process of cooling off the contents of the pot, because it makes no sense, if you want to keep it hot, that you would transfer it from one container, one kettle, to a second, and that demonstration alone should remove what we call the mechzeh kemevashel, that it looks like he's cooking it on Shabbos. The answer is, he's not cooking it. He's not interested in boiling it. He wants to keep it a little bit warm. And the very fact that he demonstrates that he's not interested in cooking it by transferring over to a second kettle, that itself removes the chashash, that suspicion that Mechzeh Kemevashel looks like he's cooking it. We only say Mechzeh Kemevashel when there's a havamin in the eyes of the spectator that it looks like he really wants to boil something up and cook it. But in this case that he transferred to a second kettle, he's obviously not interested in cooking. He may want to keep it a little bit warm, so he keeps it in this warm kira, which is a garuf and a katum. But nevertheless, the Gemara says that maybe we should apply this gzera with the Iser Chazara with a low plug, and we shouldn't make any distinctions, and we should say the following, that if we cannot replace the original Shehiyah, then it's awesome. And the very fact that now he's putting a new kettle, so to speak, a different kettle, back into the Kira, that itself makes it impossible for us to replace the original Shehiyah. And this leads us to the Mishnah here in the middle of Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis. Tanur sheisikua bekash ubegvava lo yitain. Now, what I'd like to do here again, it's hard for me to show you diagrams, you know, through Zoom or whatever, 8x8, whatever it's called. I'll just give it a little bit of a shot. I don't know, can you see any of this? It doesn't matter really, but if by chance you could see these diagrams, what you're going to see is there are three types of ovens, so to speak. One is called a tanur, the other is called a kupach, and the third is called a kira. The kira, which you'll see here on the right side, has enough great space on top for two kederos. The kupach only has space for one kedera, and the tanur is closed on top, and we put food inside the oven. And the Gemara thinks that there are three different levels of heat. The most intense heat is the tanur. The least amount of heat is the kira, because there's enough air space here, because the top of the kira has room for two different kederos. The kupach, which is basically half of a kira, is not as hot as a tanur, but it retains more heat than a kupach because there's less air space if there's only room on top of the kupach for one pot. So now we've learned the first mission in kira, which discusses leaving a pot of food in a kira or on a kira on Erev Shabbos, and again Chazara on Shabbos itself. Now we move on to a discussion about a tanur, and finally about a kupach. So we're going to put our kira on the back burners, pardon the funny pun, and we're going to discuss a tanur. So tanur shisikua bekash ubegvava lo yitain bein mitochu bein al gabav. Now we said about kash ugvava, which are materials like straw that just simply go up in smoke. They don't create coals, and therefore in the case of Akira, we were lenient, and we allowed you to leave your pot on Akira, that's an Eino Garif, Eino Kotuf, if the fuel was Kash Ugvava. Not so in the case of Tanur. In the case of Tanur, because it is closed on all sides, and it traps the heat, and there's an intense heat, we're not going to allow you to place your food neither inside the Tanur, or even on the upper side of the Tanur, right? There was a top of the oven which was also hot to some extent, not as hot obviously as the inside, and we're not going to allow you to do this. Now, what about the case of a kupach? A kupach, we said, was midway between a tanur and a kira. It has a lot of heat, but not the amount of heat as a tanur, because again, the food is kept up on top, there are grates, and there's airspace for that one pot. So here the Mishnah differentiates between what fuel you use to heat up the kupach. Hisikua bekashu begvava hareze kikirayim. With regard to using straw as your fuel, kupach has the same identical status as a kira, and therefore you're allowed to leave your pot on a kupach. And again, you have only room for one pot on a kupach that was heated up by kash ubegvava, by this material that goes up in smoke. But begefes uvietzim, harehu kitanur. Now again, the Gemara is going to vacillate what those words mean, but let me give you what I think is like the intuitive interpretation of the last few words in the Mishnah. If you heated up your kupach with coals, what I mean wood that became coals, or this kind of pulp that we spoke about, gefes, that becomes coals, then we give the kupach the same identical status as a tanur. And if that be the case, then let's take the sheet of Chananya for a moment in the previous Mishnah, because the Gemara vacillated back and forth whether the previous Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Kira, reflects the sheet of Chananya or the sheet of Chacham. Let's go according to that approach, that is Chananya. And they were going to say that even though Chananya, in the case of Gefes V'Eitzim, would allow Shehiya on an Eino Garif, Eino Kotuv, in the case of a Kupach, even Chananya would agree that you must require a Garif and a Kotuv. Why? Because a Kupach has a certain similarity in terms of the heat, that's the intense heat that's trapped inside, to a Tanur. And we're going to now upgrade the status of a kupach to a tanur, and everyone's going to agree that we're not going to allow shehiya on a kupach if it's an eino garif, eino kotum. Even Chananya, who in the case of Kira allowed shehiya on an eino garif kotum, would be more than a kupach, that's not allowed. And if we're going to go like the Chachamim, then we're going to say, well, the Chachamim would allow you to leave food in a kira if A, it was a garif kotum, and two, if the tavshil was mevushal called sarko, possibly even if it's mitztamik v'yofalo. That was two different opinions in the Gemara, and that's going to be asur in the case of a kupach if the kupach was heated up by gefes v'yetz. So let's go through the Gemara now and see what the various interpretations of the Mishnah could possibly be. Tanur shesikua. We're talking about a tanur. This is a real McCoy oven that was heated, in this case, by Kashu Gvava. Sover of Yosef lememar tocho mamish, al gabov mamish. Rav Yosef wanted to come up with a leniency even in the case of tanur. Now, again, when we read the Mishnah, we are absolutely convinced that in the case of tanur, there's no go. There's no room for leniency. And what that means is that there's no way you could heat up your tavshil through a tanur. But Rav Yosef looks at the Mishnah, and he wants to read it meticulously. The Mishnah says, lo yitain, Beimitochu ben al gabov. Let's not add anything to the Mishnah that doesn't say in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to put your pot inside or even on the top of the oven, but the Mishnah doesn't say a word about the side of the oven. I'm a lismok shapir dummy. The Mishnah is implying that if you want to take your pot and smack it up against the outside wall of the oven, that's mutter. Esvei Abaye, Abaye says no. Let's look at the Sefer of the Mishnah, and from the Sefer we can reveal something about the Reisha. In the Sefer of the Mishnah it says, Kupach she sikua bekashu begevava, hareu kiki rayim, begefes ubeitzim, hareu kitanur viasur. So again, the status of a gefes is complicated. The gefes is the androgynous here, that's in some sense it's like a tanur, in some sense it's like a kira. And it all depends on what fuel you lit you. Now, if the Mishnah is coming to tell you that Kupach is more strict than Kira, and that's why it says Harehu Kitanur, so those three words give it all away, that in a certain case, that's called Gefes V'Yetzim, the Kupach is equated with a Tanur, and therefore it's Asur. The implication is that because of this equation between a kupach and a tanur, therefore it's asur. Hakikira, had you equated a kupach with a kira, again we're talking about the safe in the case of Gefes V'Yetzim, shari, then it would be mutter. You would be permitted to place food on a kupach to the same extent that you'd be on a kupach to the same extent that you permit putting food on top of a kira. If it would have been that kupach is equivalent to kira. But my askinon, what is the scenario? Ilem al gabov. If you're going to tell me that we're dealing with a case where he places the food on top of the kupach, ubimayan, what's the situation here? Ilem avisha'enu garfenu katum. Well, you're telling me that it would have been mutter had it been a kira. Well, if it's an eno garf, eno kotev, and you're putting it on top of the kupach, then even had it been a kira, and you were putting it on top of the kira, that also would be asur. El kira ki eno grufa ktuv al gabav mishari? Are you allowed, this is a rhetorical question, to place your pot on top of a kira if it's an eno garf, eno kotev? And the Gemara now is assuming that our Mishnah reflects the sheet of the Chachamim of Chananya. Elolav lismoch. It must be that what the Mishnah is telling you is that if it's an eno garaf yeno katum, it's asur in the case of a kupach because it's not like a kira. And had it been like a kira, it would have been mutter. Well, I got news for you, buddy. Even if it would have been a kira, it's a garaf, if it's an eno garaf yeno katum, it would also. The answer is lismoch. That we would have been lenient in terms of Akira, had the kupach been equated with Akira, in placing your food smack up against the outer wall, the exterior wall of the Kira. And we would have applied that to a kupach. Comes along the Mishnah and says, no, a kupach is like a tanur. And what does it mean, a kupach is like a tanur? Ketani arev kanur v'asur, that even smicha is asur. This is Abaye, fantastic analysis of Abaye, who claims that if you want to know the taich, the interpretation of the resh of the Mishnah with regard to a tanur, and you're asking whether or not smicha on the outside of the tanur would be mutter, I learned the sefer very carefully, and by analyzing the sefer, we shed a light on the resh. The sefer indicates that a kupach is asur where a kira would be mutter. And we're talking about an enu garf enu katu. So where would a kira be mutter and an enu garf enu katu? The Gemara now reflects the conclusion of the sugi that we had back on Daf Lamed Zayin, that smicha is mutter even in an enu garf enu katu because it's on the outside of the kira. And now kupach is being equated with a tanur to teach us that even smicha is asur. And to that extent, we upgrade, so to speak, in stringency the status of a kupach to that of a tanur, and even smicha is also. So here's where Abaye is taking an opposite position to Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef thought he had a great deal from the Reisha to imply that in Tanur it says, lo yitein, lo al gabav, lo mitocho, but smicho be mutter. And Abaye says, wait a minute, read the Sefer. And if you read the Sefer, then it sheds light on the Reisha. And now the Gemara is going to reject Abaye. Omar av adubar ava, hocha, Bekupa Gorif Ekatu Vitanu Gorif Grufok Tumaskinan. The Mishnah is not reflecting the Shita of the Chachamim, but rather the Shita of Chananya. And the issue here is not about an Eino Gorif Yeno Katum, but on the contrary, about a Gorif Ekatum. In the previous Mishnah at the beginning of this Perek, we established according to Lo Yiten Lo Yachzir, if you remember. And the authorship of the Mishnah was attributed to Chananya, that you're allowed to leave, in the case of Akira, a pot that was partially cooked on Erev Shabbos, even though it's an open flame. And now the Mishnah is contrasting Tanur and Kupach with Akira. And the Mishnah is telling us that despite the fact that we were Makil in the case of a Garif HaKotum in Kira, we're going to be Machmir in the case of a Garif HaKotum in both a Tanur and a Kupach. And therefore, when the Mishnah says about Kupach, in the case of Eitzim, that it's Hareu Kitanur, we upgrade it to the stringency of a Tanur, and what the Mishnah is trying to convey is the Afagav, the Garif HaKotum, even though it's a Garif HaKotum, which in the case of Kira, a Gruf and a Ketuma would be Mutter. A Gav of Asur, in the case of a Kupach, by contrast, because we elevate it to the status of a Tanur, is Asur, even though it's a Garif HaKotum. And basically we're saying that even Chananya would agree that Garif HaKotum is not going to help you, neither in the case of a Tanur, and not even in the case of a Kupach. De'i Kikira, had we equated a Kupach with a Kira, Ki Gruf or Ketuma Shapir Domi would be allowed. And therefore, if the Mishnah is talking about a Garif HaKotum, and the Mishnah is only equating a Kupach to a Tanur with regard to a Garif HaKotum, then it could very well be that as far as Smicha is concerned, so the Mishnah is equating, a Kupach with a Tanur in the case of a Garif HaKotum, and that stands in contrast to a Kira, but it could be that in the case of Smicha, it would be mutter, both in the case of Kupach and even in the case of a Tanur. And therefore, Abaye's diuk is no diuk. That's what Rav Adi Bar Rav is pointing out. But again, he has to introduce a very important element into the equation, that our Mishnah here, on Daf Lamed Ches, is addressing a case of a Garif HaKotum and setting up a contrast between Kira on the one hand and Tanur and Kupach on the other hand. However, the Gemara has a braisa. Tanya Kavosei Dabaye. We found a braisa that supports Abaye, which means that smicha is mutter even in the case of a tanur. Tanur shesikua bekash ubegvava ein somchim lo v'ein tzorch lomar al gaba v'ein tzorch lomar litocha. So the braisa opens up by saying that a tanur, even in a case where it was heated up by straw, which goes up, as we said, in flames, and there's no real chashash of chitui. Nevertheless, we're going to be machmir because of the intense heat of a tanur, and A, B, and C is asur. We're not allowed to put inside the oven food. We're not allowed to put on top of the oven food. We're not even allowed to smack up the tavshil on the bottom outside of the exterior wall. The ain tzarich lomar begefes uveitzim. I don't even have to address the case of coals. But kupach, here we're going to make a differentiation. Hisikua bekash ubegvava. If it was kash and gvava, where we could be more mekil, and we could equate it with a kira, is somchin lo. Then you're allowed to do smicha. But ain nosnim al gabav. We're not going to allow you to put a pot on top of the kupach, because it was very hot, a kupach like a tanur, And how much more so, it goes without saying, we're not going to allow you to put your tavshil inside the kupach, where there's real heat. And the gefes uvietzim ain't somchin lo. When we get to gefes vietzim, then we're not allowed to do smicha. So we see, what are we deriving from this braisa? You remember that Abaye wanted to prove from the Sefer the equation between, I should say the contrast, but the possible equation between Kupach and Akira, that Smicha is Asur. Well, here in this braisa, it says Beferish that Kupach Shesiku Abakash Ubegvava Somchin Lo, that we're allowed to do Smicha in the case of a kupach, and we're talking about an eno garuf eno katum. Now again, it could very well be that this Tanya Kavose d'Abaye to come to the conclusion that in the case of a tanur, smicha's asur, in an eno, right, smicha's asur, this braisa, although it definitely supports Abaye as far as the Tanur is concerned, because you see that in the case of Tanur, A, B, and C was prohibited, even in if it was fueled up by straw, and it means that even Smicha was explicitly prohibited. But in the case of a Kupach, we said that in at least in the case of kash, you're allowed to do smicha. And what I'm trying to point out here is that this braisa does shed a new light here on our sugya, because we've been questioning smicha back and forth, both in the case of a tanur and in the case of a kupach. And the Mishnah went out of its way to equate kupach with a tanur. However, there is one leniency with regard to smicha in the case of a kupach, but that's only in the case of kash ugvava. So let's look at the Raisa one more time. The Raisa says, kupach shisikur v'kash ugvava somchin lo. That although we equate kupach with a tanur, but the one exception to that rule and the single leniency that we apply to a kupach is smicha. And that, in, you know, to a certain extent, reflects Rav Yosef. Again, don't misunderstand me. This price is absolutely against Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said that smicha was mutter even in the case of a tanur. That for sure is not. In fact, smicha is asur even in the case of a kupach. If it was hisikua b'eitzim. But in the case of hisikua b'kash, there we do find one single leniency as far as smicha is concerned. Amalei Rav Acha b'rei d'Rava l'Rav Ashi. Hai kupach hechi domi. What is a kupach? And what is the status in halacha of a kupach? Ike kira domi. If we're going to say that a kupach has less heat than a tanur, and therefore we should equate it with a kira, is then the mission is very difficult. Hafilu begefes v'yetzim nami, even in the case where he heated up his kira with coal, we should still allow him to place food on top of it. Again, let's go according to Chachamim, it's a garuf v'katu. V'ike tanur dami, if on the other hand we're going to go all the way, and we're going to say that a kupach has such an intense heat, and there's very little airspace coming in to cool off the pot, therefore ketanur domi is then afilu v'kashu b'gvava nami lo. How do you orchestrate this middle of the road shita that on the one hand, with regard to gefes v'yetzim, we're going to equate a kupach with a tanur, but on the other hand, in the case of kashu g'vava, we're going to equate a kupach with a kira. Amalei, and the Gemara says in the name of Rav Ashi, nafish havle mide kira, v'zutar havle mide tanur. Although it's hotter than a kira, but it's not quite as hot as a tanur. Therefore, it gets this twilight zone status, a benish mosha status, and we're going to differentiate between fuel of straw and fuel of eitzim of wood. Hechi domi kupach, hechi domi kira. I showed you the diagrams. They're based on this following Gemara. Amar of Yossi bar Chanina, kupach makom shfisas kedera achas. The top of the kupach has room for only one pot. Kira, on the other hand, makom shvisas shtei kideros. There's place for two kideros. Now, Rabosai, let me ask you the following. If you were to take a knife, an axe, and cut a kupach down the middle, would it be worth anything? It'd be worthless. If you took a kira that has room for two pots, then I would ask you, are you cutting it vertically or horizontally? What do I mean? Are you doing north, south, or east, west? If you do east, west, it's worthless. But if you do it north, south, then what you get is two kupachs. Now again, you may have to restructure it and get yourself an artisan, a manufacturer, but it's still worth something. And that's what the Gemara is going to talk about now in terms of susceptibility to Kabbalah's Tumah. I have a Mishnah in Masech Kalim in terms of Tara and Tumah that would support this understanding of the difference structurally between a Kira and a Kupach. And it says the following, Kira Shenechleka Li'arka Tahora, but L'Rachba Tmea. So imagine the following. You have a kira, and you cut it down the arka, right? So what you have is, if you take a look at my hands for a moment, you've got a place for a pot here, a place for a pot here in a kira, and you split it down the arka, up and down. You end up with nothing. It's not a kli. And once pakashem kli, now the tumah is completely gone. However, kupach, but l'rochba tmea, right? If let's say instead of cutting the kira li'arka, you cut it l'rochba, that's the width from east to west, and that means that now you have two, you know, you have basically four halves of a kira, then it's, I'm sorry, let me go over it one more time. If it's li'arka, which means that he cuts it north and south. Oh, okay. I think I got it right. Then it loses its shame kli, right? You got these four parts. If you do it l'rachba, which means from east to west, then you basically have room for one pot here on the top and room for another pot on the bottom, and that's considered a shame kli. It's still functional, and therefore it's susceptible to Kabbalah's tumah. But kupach, in the case of kupach, which has only space for one pot, is bein li'arka, bein l'rachba, tahar. No matter whether you cut it this way, or that way, up and down, or from side to side, you end up with nothing, because it cannot hold on to one single pot. And this leads us to the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Ches Amid Beis. And I'm eager to get to Lamed Ches Amid Aleph in the 5 minutes that we have, whatever, because I want to be on par with the Dafayomi. Ein nosnin beitzo b'tzad mecham b'shvil shetisgalgel. You have a hot kettle. And obviously the steel, the metal on the outside is burning hot. And it was heated up by a fire. The kettle was heated up by the fire. The status of the kettle is called, again, if I had a whiteboard, toldos ha'esh, the product of fire. Anything that was heated up by the fire is like the fire itself, and that's a doraisa halacha. And if he puts his egg on the side in order to roast it a little bit, that's called tisgalgel. He starts the process of roasting, and now it's edible. Then he has violated a malacha doraisa of bishul called slia, roasting. Now we get to a derabbanan. What's a derabbanan? Something that was heated up by solar energy. Lo yafkianu b'sudrin. We're talking about a cloth, a scarf, and it heats it up in the sun. Now, he breaks an egg on top of this very hot cloth, and it begins to fry in the heat. That's also prohibited. Rabbi Yossi Mata, Rabbi Yossi says aloud. Why? Because the Torah considers Bishul as Eish, only if it was heated up by the fire, or something that was in turn heated up by the fire, which is called Toldos Eish. But something that was heated up by the sun, solar energy, that's not prohibited. So let's say, for example, I would take an egg and put it in a hot sun, right? I'll put it in a place where the hot sun would cook it. That's mutter. Again, I don't think it would taste too good, but you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. However, what happens if the sun heated up another object, and now I'm using that hot object that it was heated up by the sun to cook my egg? That's a machlokas shein the Tanakam, the Chachamim, and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that if chama, which means solar energy, is mutter on Shabbos, then for sure toldos hachama, something that is only a product of the scarf that was heated up by the sun, is for sure not considered bishul, and it's mutter. And the Chacham say no. Toldos hachama, since it's one step removed from the sun, and this is, by the way, the problem with all our yunkerim and all our different kinds of heating things that get heated up by the sun. So there's a metal piece inside the... what's it called in English? The thing on top of the roof, you know, that gets hot.
Dud Shemesh.
Yeah, okay, good. So we're all Israelis here, so we can call it a Dud Shemesh. Okay, I'm sure there's an English word for it. But in any event, so that's a problem, because that's called Toldos HaChama. That's the product of Chama. And the Rabbanan of Rabbi Yossi insisted that there was a gzera that we have to prohibit Toldos HaChama Otu Toldos Ha'or. Because when you look at this piece of metal inside your Dud Shemesh, you don't realize whether it was heated up electrically by a fire or was heated up by the sun. But here's a case where even Rabbi Yossi agrees. Lo yatminenu b'chol u'b'avak drachim b'shvil shetitzle. The dust or the sand that's been heated up by the sun and is really boiling hot on a very hot summer day, you're not allowed to put your egg and submerge it into the sand in order to cook it, because that's already hatmana. That's already a situation where you've completely surrounded the egg, and that looks very similar to hatmana, which is called shemayatmin beremetz. We once mentioned that idea. Now we have the famous Maisa Sha'asu Anshei Tveria. In Tveria they had the hot springs, and the Anshei Tveria had a chachma. They didn't want to drink the water from the Chamei Tveria itself. They felt it was a little bit non-hygienic. What they did was, Heviu Silon Shel Tzonei L'toch Ama Shel Chama. They brought a pipe, and the pipe would bring cold water through the Chamei Tveria, underneath the Chamei Tveria. Then there was a basin that would receive the water on the other side, and the pipe would feed the water into that basin, into that receptacle, and the water would be boiling hot because it ran through the entire, under the water, the hot water of Chamei Tveria. Omolem Chachomim, you're here in B'Shabbos. If you do it on Shabbos, then Kechamin Shehuchmu B'Shabbos, it has the same status as water that you heated up on Shabbos. V'yasurim B'Rechitza B'Shtia, you're not allowed to drink from that water. You're not allowed to bathe yourself in that water. B'yantif, asurim, kecham and shehuch b'yantif, asurim b'rechitza, umutar b'shtia. We're allowing you to bathe in that water. I'm sorry. We're allowing you to drink that water that was heated up on yantif, because you're allowed to turn a fire on, or I shouldn't say, the transfer of fire, in order to heat up water on yantif and boil your water. Hot tea on yantif, but you're not allowed to bathe on yantif in water that was heated up on yantif itself. And basically the Chachamim objected to the Anshei Tveria, telling them that they had no right to do what they did, because we're going to consider this water as if it was heated up on Shabbos. And water that's heated up on Shabbos is Aser Bein Berachitza Bein B'Shtia. If it was heated up on yantif, although it's Mutav B'Shtia, it's Aser Berachitza. And the Gemara says, Iboilahu, let's go back to the case of someone who roasted his egg on the side of a hot kettle. And Gilgal Maya became partially roasted. Amrav Yosef Gilgal Chayev Chatos. If he roasted enough that now it's edible, then he violates Meleches Bishul Doraisa because of Toldos Ha'or. told us Sa'ar means something that was heated up by the fire. Omar Ma'abred Ravina Fanana Mitnina, we have this in a Mishnah. This is a Mishnah at the end of Masechta Shabbos, on top of Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. Kol Sheba Bechamim Milufnei Shabbos is Shorin also Bechamim B'Shabbos. Anything that was heated up before Shabbos, is you're allowed to soak something in that hot water on Shabbos. Again, we're going to get to a sugya called Kali Abishul. There are certain things that you're not allowed to soak on Shabbos because they, like herring, they become quickly cooked, but otherwise, generally, you're allowed to do that. Kol Shalom Baba Chavim Tzei Shabbos, but if you didn't soak it in hot water before Shabbos and it's pure raw, then medichin oso bechamin b'Shabbos, you're allowed to do what's called irui kli rishon on Shabbos. In other words, you're allowed to take raw fruit or vegetables or whatever it might be and pour hot water on top of it on Shabbos. That's irui kli rishon. But there are foods that are prohibited even in irui kli rishon. Chutz min amaliach hayoshan, we'll call it herring. Or kulyas ha'ispanon, this was Spanish a fish that would very easily be cooked. It's very soft. And all you need is to pour hot water from a kettle. Shadachasam zui gmar melachton. That by pouring it, that's considered gmar melacha, gmar bishul. And most Rishonim say this means he's chayav from melechas bishul on what's called kaliya bishul kuf lamed yud, something that only needs a minimum amount of bishul, and yochayev mishum bishul. Other Rishonim say that, I don't want to confuse you, that yochayev here mishum makav patish. And the Mishnah says, lo yafkienu besudrin. So we go on to the case of lo yafkienu besudrin. But that, I think, we'll have to leave in Yirtzeh Hashem for tomorrow. So again, rinsing with hot water, these kinds of fish that make them fit for consumption, is considered cooking. And you violate the malacha of bishul. That's called kaliya bishul be'irui, by pouring out of a kli rishon that was over the fire. Okay then, so if anyone has any questions, now's a good time to ask. And we're going to officially end the shiur now. And I wish everyone a chag sameach, mo'adim l'simcha.
Sure, Rabbi, I have a question.
Please.
The reason you're not allowed to use hot water from the Dud Shemesh on Shabbat is because as you use it, it's a groma, you're causing cold water to come into the tank, which then heats up. Is that the reason?
There are two problems here with a Dud Shemesh, and I think we should separate one from the other. First of all, we have water that was heated up on Shabbos itself. Now, you may say that the first water that comes out, let's say you have pipes that bring the hot water from the Dud Shemesh, and now you open the faucet, it could be that the first time you open the faucet, you're going to get water that was heated up on Erev Shabbos. Again, that might depend upon what time it is, but let's say, let's talk about Shabbos afternoon. You know, it's been a long time since Shabbos began, and some of the water that you're going to get when you open up the hot water faucet is going to have been heated up on Shabbos. That's a problem. And again, we're going to have to go into all the details about what's the status, as you saw the Chachmei Tveria objected to the Anshei Tveria, because water that's heated up by Shabbos on Shabbos is awesome. Even though you set up the system to heat up the water on Erev Shabbos, but it was heated up on Shabbos. Keep in mind, the Anshei Tveria thought that if I set up a system with the pipes under the Chachmei Tveria that's going to heat up the water on Shabbos itself, they thought that was mutter because I set up the pipes on Erev Shabbos. But the Chachmei Tveria rejected this. But let's get back to your question, Michael. What about the problem of taking hot water out so that now it's replaced by cold water? So that's called grumma. Now, with regard to grumma, which means you indirectly remove something so that now something else is subject to a malacha, you remove the cold water, so that now hot water comes in and it gets cooked.
Other way around.
I'm sorry, cold water comes in, it gets cooked. That's a major issue in Shabbos, and the general rule is, and we're going to have this later on in the fourth parak, that grum on Shabbos is not a problem.
Oh.
However, there is a sheet of Rav Yossi that gram kibui is awesome, which means that, let's say, for example, and again, from kibui, we'll see if we can equate it to bishul. In the case of gram kibui, what happens is there's a fire. He wants to put out the fire, which he's not allowed to do. That's melechas kibui. So what he does is he sets up vessels, barrels full of water, and when the hot fire hits these vessels, the vessels break, they burst, and the water extinguishes the fire. Rabbi Yossi says that's awesome. Now, there are two ways of learning Rabbi Yossi. One way is to say that Rabbi Yossi held that kibui is different than the other 38 malachos, and for whatever reason, gram kibui is awesome. Others say that Rabbi Yossi saw it as a general rule in all malachos that grama is prohibited. Now again, we have to check out the poskim, but let's assume for argument's sake that we paskin like Rabbi Yossi, and there is an Issur grama on Shabbos. Now here again, we have to figure out, is grama on Shabbos a doraisa? It's a drabanan. Let's assume it's drabanan, but nevertheless, it's awesome. If we apply that to all malachas, and our specific case will be bishul, then by removing whatever water is there now, cold water will come into the system, into this dud, and now it will be heated up on Shabbos. You are causing bishul on Shabbos. And even if I grant you that grama would not be a violation of Alecha Shabbos, and it's not a violation of bishul in this case, but nevertheless on a drabbanan level, it would be awesome. Now, what happens if he couldn't care less whether new water comes in to heat up? Let's say he could convince you, for whatever reason, that this doesn't interest him. That becomes what's called a Dover Shein Miskaven. And in a Dover Shein Miskaven, on a Durabanon, we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, that's mutter. So again, we're going to assume that the problem of the Dud Shemesh, in terms of cold water coming into the Dud that's going to be heated up, is a grama bipsik reisha, or if it's not a psik reisha, it's nichole. He really is very excited about the fact that new water comes into the system that's going to be heated. And therefore you cannot apply the principle of Reb Shimon of Dover Shein Miskav. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but I'm just telling you it's a very complicated issue.
The reason I ask, I mean, you raised the two points. The reason I ask on the second subject is that there are Dudei Shemesh now which you can restrict new water coming in. And therefore, you're only using the water that was there before Shabbos. So that gets over the second point, but doesn't get over your first point.
Right, if the heating process is going on in Shabbos, because otherwise, you know, let's say an hour into Shabbos, you know, your water will be cold or whatever it might be. So then obviously the heating process went on in Shabbos. And that's going to be a machlokas between Anshei Tveria and Chachmei Tveria. The Anshei Tveria are going to claim, well, I set up the system before Shabbos, let the heating process take place on Shabbos. It's all memela, it's all automatic. I set it up before Shabbos. We're going to have cases of irrigating fields where he sets up the irrigation on Erev Shabbos, and it waters the field on Shabbos. And the Anshei Tveria would be much more lenient about that. But the Chachmei Tveria said, we're not going to allow this. We're not going to allow you to set up a bishul on Erev Shabbos, and again, even though, and the basic question you should throw my way is there's no Shema Yechata B'Gecholim. You know, all the questions about Shehiyah of setting up a pot of food on a fire on Erev Shabbos is because there are coals, and you might be tempted to stir the coals to urgently speed up the process of Bishul. That's not going to apply in the case of Anshei Tveria. In the case of a Dud Shemesh, I don't think anyone's going to be afraid that he might climb up to his roof and fix the Dud Shemesh, you know, in order to speed up the process of Bishul. So that's why the Chumrah of the Chachmei Tveria against the Anshei Tveria really has to be understood, and this has to do with a whole different sugya, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, which is called Gzeras HaBalonim. And I don't even want to get into it now because this, you know, even as soon as we touch on Gzeres HaBalonim, but suffice it to say that hot water on Shabbos is a problem. It's not simple at all. And there are very special laws that apply to hot water on Shabbos that do not apply and have no, shall I say, similarity to any other malach of Shabbos. So there are issues here about the Chachmei Tveria that we haven't even touched on. Okay, then?
We can, yeah, fine. All right, we can use, there's no problem with a kumkum. I mean, why is it that then, from what you described in the first scenario about the problem with heating up water on Shabbat itself and using that, how come we can use a kumkum, a Shabbos kumkum on Shabbos?
I don't want to answer your question, Michael, because in this case, it's mutav sheyu shogeg. I'd rather not tell you because I don't want to ruin your Shabbos from now on. But I'm telling you, lo pashut, and that's as far as I'm willing to say. You know, Rav Chaim Brisker was very, very machmir about these issues, you know.
Okay, all right. One other quick question.
You know, in the winter months, my skin is very sensitive. I can't tolerate cold, really cold, you know, water coming onto my... So what do? I take water that was heated up, and I pour it into a kli shadi, and from a kli shadi to a kli shlishi, and I add some cold water, so it shouldn't be too burning hot, otherwise I'll burn my hands, and I end up washing my hands with warm water. You should know, lo pashut. Again, I
do that as well. I do that as well.
All right, so we're both holding like certain lenient poskim, but I'm just telling you for your own edification, just in terms of the world of lumbus, of theoretical halacha, it's not poshut. It's not poshut at all.
Interesting. Okay.
It's really not poshut.